TNT Radio wants to know what you really think. From COVID-19, the Ukraine conflict, the persecution of Julian Assange, corrupt government, the WEF, digital IDs and digital currency, the Great Reset, the disassembling of the West, and the destruction of the world as we once knew it. Your opinion matters. It's time to get on our soapbox and tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Weekends with Alan Miller on today's news talk radio, TNT.
Hello, everyone around the world. I'm Alan Miller, and this is TNT Radio. A big shout to Novak Djokovic, of course, for having the courage of his convictions and being one of the most magnificent performers. Our show is all about freedom and rights and democracy. And I'm very pleased in this second hour to be bringing in someone who has campaigned for the last couple of years for local democratic rights for residents and businesses. Niall Crowley lives and works in East London. He's a writer and a campaigner against the imposition of low traffic neighbourhoods, LTNs, road closures. Niall, welcome to TNT Radio.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me. I'm enjoying listening to the show. It's great to be here.
Great. Thank you. So you campaigned for quite some time. Tell us a bit about the first round of impositions, because we now know it's been in all the press that Philip Glanville, the mayor of Hackney, is saying 75% reduction in cars. But how did this all start? Give us a little bit of a history on it, please.
Yeah, that 75% figure, we should discuss that. It's just almost beggar's belief, really, doesn't it? It's quite shocking. I think it started in Hackney, which is the next borough along to Haringey, where Victoria spoke really eloquently about. So it hit us really during lockdown. And also the next borough along, which is Islington, which is further into central London. And I used to live on the border of both. And I kind of was walking out one day and I noticed these, they're like huge giant plant pots with no entry signs, the cars there, right in the middle of the road. And it was the border between Hackney and Islington. And it's quite a working class area. And they were all along, and it just struck me that they were a little bit kind of Checkpoint Charlie-ish, stopping people getting between the two boroughs, and it seemed kind of pointless and selfish, really. And then I found out that there were protests in Islington, so I went along to one of these protests, very working class, very different to anything I'd been to before, quite bolshy, quite good fun. Quite positive, you know, they were saying, you know, these are our streets. These are our streets. We live in a working city. We don't want to live in a village. We all want cleaner streets and everything. They had some really good speakers there. They had some musicians. They took over the roads for a little bit, surrounded by police. I mean, they were saying, you know, we're all drivers. There were all kinds of people there. They weren't doing an Extinction Rebellion, deliberately blocking traffic, but just wanted to make their point. And then I wrote an article about them. It was one of the first, I think it might have been the first articles about LTNs. I didn't even know what they were at the time. And then someone from the group got in touch with me and said, hey, look, you know, you're in Hackney. There's a group just started up in Hackney. So I got in touch with them. I didn't even know these things were happening in my borough. And then bang, they just started appearing everywhere. And we've now got, currently got 19, I think it is. We're more badly affected than any other borough in the country, much worse than even Haringey. They're starting to feel it now. So, yeah, I wrote this article and started getting drawn in, not realizing that most of the roads were being closed and all the traffic was being sent there my own road. But that wasn't really the reason that I got involved. It was just the way that they were imposed without any, I mean, they're such major changes to the way we go about our lives that it was almost like the biggest changes in London since, you know, since the World War II. And yet we weren't told. I was just looking at, Hackney did this 10-year transport plan from, I think it's 2015. I just dug it out again and had a look at it because it is quite astonishing. Even Stalin only had 5-year plans. Hackney had 10 years. if you do a search on it, it's a PDF. There are no mentions of low traffic neighborhoods. They do not mention them at all. And if you look at the results, there's about 50, I think it's 50, 54 people responded. This is an entire London borough. They reorganized the whole area for the next 10 years on 54 responses. And that's, as Victoria was saying, that's the utter breathtaking arrogance of all of this. It's almost hard to believe.
Well, it does seem that Philip Glanville is very cavalier in his responses. Now, it is the case that this is getting a lot more attention. I know that you've been on we've been speaking to ITV and BBC, and clearly many people are now very concerned. This 75% and his, we're not getting rid of cars, we're just making them go in a certain direction. Tell us a little bit about that. What does that really mean for people in Hackney?
Well, just to go back to Philip Glanville, who's the mayor of Hackney. He is a proud Extinction Rebellion supporter, just to let you
really?
Know.
Wow.
Yeah, he's very proud of it. You can Google, he's got an Extinction Rebellion sticker on his cycling hat. And we've got under a Freedom of Information revelation, we've got his email correspondence with the London Cycling Campaign. And we had a little protest there. So they're very, very influential, the London Cycling Campaign. And they're a very, very small group. We went to their AGM. There were about eight of them there, the Hackney branch. And he was there speaking to these eight or nine people who were calling us fascists, by the way, because we were protesting. Sometimes you just got to laugh about these things. So, he's happily having these chats with the Hackney London Cycling Campaign, but ignoring thousands of residents. We've got a 17,500 petition from Hackney residents, and they just won't even acknowledge it. But, you know, eight cyclists. I'm a cyclist myself, by the way, so it's not. I'm not anti-cyclist.
Me too.
I'm furious that this is done in the name of cycling, because, you know, it's just, I would say the thing that's really changed in London over the last few years as a cyclist, I mean, it used to be quite hair-raising experience about 20 years ago, is drivers. You know, drivers have really got used to cyclists and have really, forget all of the measures, cycle lanes and all of those kind of things. London drivers have been absolutely brilliant, and they're really, really good, and they're really tolerant. And yet this little campaign is really setting one group against another. And that's one thing that really bugs me. It is almost like a little culture war, you know, the worthy cyclists. You know, they're not cyclists. They're people who are like preaching from their, they use their cycles as a pulpit to preach to the rest of us, giving us all a.
Well, it is astonishing that you use that figure of 17,500 residents. And I also love cycling, but if I'm going to go and see my disabled mother in another borough, or if I'm going to visit people, if I'm going to do the shopping, I can't do that whilst I'm on my bike. And the idea that we have that mandated and imposed on us, when many of us have said we don't want it, seems shocking. But some time ago I had an experience with Hackney, because we ran a campaign called We Love Hackney, and they were also very cavalier with us, and they said, well, you've got to have reduction in nighttime zones. And we were saying that, you know, this kind of activity of hospitality is what has made Hackney what it is, what's put it on the map. It's what's brought ad agencies and design companies and hotels and bars and cafes, young people renting and buying flats, and transformed the borough and created a lot of profile and money. And they were very snotty about us. But what then happened was we got about 30,000 people to challenge things, and we had a big campaign, and we actually won that campaign initially. They then did something very bureaucratic and they rewrote the policy to try and shunt it through. But it seems now that, you know, already you've got a groundswell of support, that many more people are going to be challenging this. And it does seem that what needs to happen, I don't know what you think about this, is that in Hackney there should be a big public debate, a town hall style debate, with Philip Glanville and members of Hackney Council and residents and everyone. Have everyone put on the table their thoughts, their concerns, and really thrash this out, and to challenge things somewhat more. I mean, what do you think about that?
I think that's a great idea, Alan. If you can help us do it, that would be great. You know, when we were at the outside the cycling campaign AGM, Philip Glanville did, Mayor Glanville did promise us a debate, and then backtracked on it, and he hasn't done it. And we have repeatedly invited them to do it. You have to do it this time. He tweeted to me the other day saying, you know, we're taking on board your concerns. Well, how can he be doing that when he's closing down 75% of our roads? You know, Hackney doesn't have freeways. It doesn't even have dual carriageways. So all this traffic that's being pushed, it's not just pushing traffic, it's creating new traffic. So what are the closed roads? Are like lots of little cul-de-sacs. People aren't getting rid of their cars. They're just having to drive all the way around to get to where they are. It's an attack on people inside LTNs, an attack on people outside LTNs. I mean, really, there's no such thing as a low traffic neighborhood. They were kind of quiet streets anyway, but people had cars. So yeah, absolutely. We really do need to have this out. You can't make these kind of huge changes without a proper talk to the people. And it makes people cynical and disengaged. And what we really need today is much more political discussion and engagement, not just to discuss and figure out these problems, but so many of the problems, social and economic problems that we face. And, you know, if you cut people out of the conversation, then you're just going to lead to bad planning, bad blood and resentment. You know, so it's such short-termism. On the debate as well, you know, there were council elections in May. Quite a lot of councillors left and resigned, all the councillors, and now they're starting to pop up on Twitter and elsewhere and start to criticise the mayor. And people just kept their head down, even in parliament, you know, not parliament, in the town hall. And we need a much more robust democracy, really, to be able to deal with this.
Well, you've said one thing, and that which also come up before, which is that a lot of ordinary people, working class people, are the ones being most impacted, and also some of the poorest areas. It is strange, isn't it, that you'd think that Labour, who this apparently that's their constituency, they've become very dismissive, sidelining the voices of the majority, almost as though they know best technocratically. We know it's being funded centrally. But similarly, to your point, I mean, just recently in Canterbury, two of the chief planners for many, many years said that the measures in Canterbury were Stasi-like. They were bad planning. And as you say, where are all the questions about housing and infrastructure, about services? We know that Hackney, like Haringey, underperforms in a lot of area in spite of all the new money that's come in here. And surely that should be the remit and the provision for them. So I suppose the question is, Niall, how can people follow you? What's your thoughts on Hackney? I mean, at Together Association, we are backing and supporting you and other residents and locals. I'm also a resident of Hackney. I'm in Stokey. And we will be very much doing that, shining a light with our signatures and members in each borough and in Hackney. But how can people find out a bit more? What can they do? How do they follow you? Where do they follow you on Twitter? Give us a bit of info.
Well, I am at Elon Dems on Twitter. You can probably follow
at Elon Dems
through at Elon Dems. There's a website for Hackney and elsewhere called freeourstreets.uk. I've not long written a article about consultations. There's been quite a bit of discussion before I came on about consultations. It is really interesting how they're not consultations anymore. I mean, they're kind of online digital conversations, have your say, with no yes or no answers, that deliberately confuse. You know, some people in London boroughs have had to get freedom of information orders to actually even get the results of them. So in Hackney, by the way, we've had 17 of these so-called consultations. Each one, there's been about huge 60-70% majorities against them, and they've ignored every single one and made them permanent anyway. So yeah, back to me. There's also a Hackney Facebook group called Horrendous Hackney Road Closures. We've got 7,500 members, and with the response to with these announcements this week, which was made behind closed doors and on Twitter, there was a full public council meeting this week, and they didn't mention the road closures at all. You know, the decisions were taken behind closed doors, away from the public.
Wow! So there it goes again. Now, we would very much love to have Philip Glanville come on here. So a comment on my post today talking about the show with you and others said it's a bit one-sided. Where are all the people that are pro? Well, I made the point that there's millions going into this from central government and that are being raised by local authorities. But we'd love to have Philip Glanville, the mayor of Hackney, come on and talk to us. We know at TNT Radio it's about free speech. It's about engaging with people, thrashing out ideas. We look forward very much to seeing what you're going to do, Niall, in Hackney, and we'll be supporting with the Together Association. Thank you for campaigning, and will you come and join us on the show in the future and give us an update?
I'd absolutely love to. Can I bring my records the next time?
I'm not sure if we're allowed that, but I'd love to do that.
Thank you very much, Niall Crowley. Really enjoyed it.
You can follow Niall at East London Dems. Get involved in Hackney. Let the councillors know your opinions. Let's start emailing them, tagging them, and then let's also get our MPs to know about this. I'm Alan Miller. This is TNT Radio. We'll be right back with you just after this break. Thank you.
Trish Wood on TNT Radio.
Doctors at Duke University, where Yulia has been awaiting a kidney transplant, have told her parents they will not give her a new kidney unless she is vaccinated against COVID, even though Yulia has already had and recovered from COVID. What's interesting about this story is that Chrissy Hicks, she had some audio of the doctors explaining why they would not give Yulia the kidney transplant she so needs. And what was interesting about it was the absolute lack of empathy and humanity in the voice of those doctors. And it's something that I've come to fully have taken on board during COVID, that medicine now seems to be kind of medicine practiced by guidelines and rules, right? It's not directed at the individual patient. It's practiced by guidelines and rules. I don't understand how people so committed, or allegedly so committed, to saving and nurturing human life could make a decision like this and tolerate a policy like this.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Far-left Brazilian Supreme Court orders banks to block funds of businessmen who supported the protesters in mass democracy rallies. Sounds like Canada, doesn't it?
The federal government has invoked the Emergencies Act.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Alan Miller, and this is TNT Radio. We're right in the thick of it, discussing low-traffic neighbourhoods, road closures and blocking, 15- and 20-minute neighbourhoods and ULEZ expansion. And just before the next guest, I'm minded to say that this week I went to a really interesting book launch by Thomas Farzi and Toby Green that was done by Collateral Global, which had Jay Bhattacharya and Sunetra Gupta speaking. It's called The COVID Consensus, The Global Assault on Democracy and the Poor, A Critique from the Left. And it's a brilliant, brilliant book. People should take a look at it. A bit like with Laura Dodsworth's A State of Fear, charting out all of the different measures, the policy measures that were imposed, and why there was so much silence from those who sort of associate on the left. And I think that that speaks to one of the questions as well for this discussion about local democracy and national democracy in terms of measures that are implemented by technocrats and bureaucrats who don't seem to want to listen to local residences and businesses, and instead have got this plan they want to implement. As Sadiq Khan says, he's going to do it anyway with the ULEZ expansion in spite of 80% or so saying they don't want it. and councillors across the country in Oxford, in Canterbury, in Edinburgh, and in Bath. And my next guest is actually from Bath. His name's Mark Sparrow. And people should know that next Thursday, on the 2nd of February, in Bath, there's going to be an event. There's lots of residents and businesses that are very concerned about the impacts and the measures that are being implemented. Welcome to TNT Radio, Mark. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Alan. Good to speak to you.
Good. Good. Thank you. So, Mark, I mean, we've heard a lot about Oxford. We've seen some of the clean air zone measures in Birmingham, where allegedly 50% of residents are not paying them. They're not being collected by the council, although I did see that a mother of three recently, bailiffs attempted to take her car because of a mispayment of a fine. But we haven't heard as much about Bath, although now we're beginning to see some of these horrible pictures of Checkpoint Charlie-style measures. There's 15 LTNs, I believe, with another 48 planned in total. Tell us a bit about what's happening in Bath, if you would.
Well, it just seems to have crept up on us without really any kind of warning. I think it first began during COVID, and the council was given some emergency powers to roll out experimental traffic regulation orders. And first of all, we saw the main street, main shopping street in Bath, Milsom Street, closed off. It really didn't seem to be any warning. The excuse was it would allow people walking around to socially distance. But I get the impression this was something they'd wanted to do for a long time. And so I never knew anything about it. The first thing I knew was that I got a letter in the post with a photograph of my car saying that I'd broken some law, and that they weren't going to fine me on this occasion because it just sort of come in. But if I did it again, I would be punished. And it just struck something in me, and I sort of, this doesn't seem right. This lack of consultation, it just doesn't seem right. And I got the impression that as we moved on from there, I mean, even disabled people with blue badges were banned from accessing this main shopping street, which is the heart of Bath. And now, of course, they put parklets in there and planters and other things. And I don't think it looks very, it doesn't look very good. You know, it's no better than cars parked there. But I cannot understand it. This is, I think it got them, their tails were up when they saw they could do this. And I think that attitude has carried on afterwards. So although they've said they've done some consultation, it's been very cursory and, to be honest, one-sided. And I get the impression this is going to go ahead, whatever people think.
Now, on that note, it is stark, and it's certainly the case that the Lib Dems in Bath and Somerset have kind of a very strong position in terms of their position there. But when you say you get the impression it's going to go ahead regardless, there are councils, of course, like in Ealing, where residents challenged these LTNs and they got them overturned. And there are other examples of that as well. And we know, just to look back on things, we were told by central government, for instance, is a different example, but the mandate for NHS staff was definitely going to happen and nothing was going to stop it. But when people got together and together declaration, we worked with many others, frontline staff, people did videos, we campaigned, we lobbied the government and councillors and MPs. We got it stopped. There is a groundswell of reaction and response. All sorts of different people, Mark, right, that are very unhappy about this. It crosses political party lines in a way that many things don't. You know, in terms of people organising and doing things, do you think that can have an impact and challenge these measures?
I'm hoping so. Bath is quite a sleepy place. We're not like London. And I think it takes an awful lot to get people to come out and protest in somewhere like Bath, particularly those born here or with deep roots here. We have had a lot of people move into the area from places like London recently, so maybe that will make a bit of a difference. But this meeting has been organised within the space of a week or so. And One thing that the organisers have found out is that so few people know about these LTNs. They're busy getting on with their lives. They don't know about these. And you know, we've got another thing in Bath called the Ring of Steel, which is a sort of Checkpoint Charlie's all around the historic centre of the city, which only operate between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. because apparently terrorists don't work at night. But it's supposed to be for security. But I think it's just pedestrianization by stealth. Now, you know, it might be a right move, but I think they need to speak to people. And let me give you an example of the sort of sham consultation. The council put the proposals up on its website, and it counted all the people that came to visit. Those that left a comment, it put into the pile of for or against. Those who came but didn't leave a comment, it decided to count as being in favour, because if they were that angry, they would have left a message, wouldn't they? And it's that kind of underhand, sneaky, anti-democratic kind of nonsense that's really causing alarm to people. Because if you've got a council that's sort of as Lib Dem as Bath's is, I can't see them actually taking much notice. I don't think they take much notice of people. They impose things, and if they get a good kicking from the local population, they might look at it again. But they're definitely, it's quite authoritarian down here.
Well, tell us a bit, because now this is big national news and there's all sorts of things going on with major broadcasters that are covering some of this. But tell us on the ground some of the responses, because I know that people have been giving out leaflets in the street. They've been delivering them, knocking on doors, talking to people. As you say, many people did not know about this, don't know about this till perhaps they get a fine or suddenly a road's blocked off. But what are the kind of reactions that you're getting from people, the people that are working in shops and residents, as people are talking about this event next Thursday on the 2nd of February in Bath?
Well, it's shock, disbelief, anger from a lot of shopkeepers. There's two areas in Bath where they're introducing quite strict residence parking zones, RPZs. These are going to decimate some of the businesses like pubs and cafes and general shops. This is going to make it very hard for people just to pop up, park, do the business, do whatever they need to do and move on. It's all about, the council has a policy that 25% of car journeys must be reduced, well, must be eliminated. And so what they're asking for people to do is to walk, cycle, or wheel, as they call it, wheeling. And I think they're trying to push people into this, and it's not so much as a nudge as a shove, a very big shove. And I also put some of the blame for this. It's central government that is actually putting a lot of money in towards local councils to get them to do this, to meet the journey to net zero. And the councils are, well, free money from central government. It's like catnip for councils. I mean, they go for it every time, even if it costs them money. And so what we end up doing is we've got cycle lanes that don't seem to be used very much and have made things quite difficult for emergency vehicles. And it's just the whole thing just seems to be ill thought out, poorly consulted. But yeah, there's shock for people saying they had no idea this was going to happen. We don't really have a vibrant local media. Our local newspapers sort of dying on its knees almost. And so people don't get to hear stuff like they used to. And I don't think the council particularly goes out and says to people, by the way, we're shutting your road off, or we're going to make life more difficult for you. They just tell people how they're going to clean the air up and how they're going to reduce the traffic, and it's all going to be wonderful, and it's going to be like Holland. We're all going to be so happy.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we have seen is that as people have started to do videos, whether they're in Haringey or Hackney or in Oxford, we've seen a lot of them from the Cowley Road, from people who've been there a long period of time, who are talking about actual harms and damages to their business, concrete examples of the fact that deliveries can't get there, that customers are leaving. We know people like Clint Pugh, who's got three hospitality venues and has a big sign outside. He's actually going to be doing a new sign because now the council are trying to tell him to take it down. That does resonate with people. It does connect because we have heard, haven't we, this idea that this is all some big conspiracy, it's outsiders. But obviously, this is something that really affects and impacts locals, right? I mean, you know, what's your thought on that?
I think there's a democratic deficit in this country. I think the people that are in Westminster and the people that run local councils are almost a separate caste. They are apart from the people that they are supposed to serve. And they seem to be taking the attitude that we basically are here like children to do as we're told. There's no kind of respect. It's the tail is definitely wagging the dog. And because there is a democratic deficit, because the turnouts in local elections are so low, and because the current central government is so unpopular, I can't see an end to these councils with these sort of more extreme policies actually being voted out. So what we're seeing instead is this popular action of people setting up groups to say, no, this is wrong. Our businesses are going to go bust. The impact is huge and it's unintended consequences. I don't think the people, however well-meaning they are with these policies, have quite understood what they're unleashing. Our modern economy is built around the car. And whilst we must do things to reduce pollution and congestion and other things like that, I think they're going to replace one set of problems with a whole load of bigger problems.
The fascinating point you're making about the democratic deficit, it's almost as if the bureaucratic impulse, the lack of relationship to ordinary people, to voters, to residents, citizens up and down the country, that's shared across the board, right? It's shared by the current government, but also by the opposition parties. Although it does seem that people are getting quite active and even people, maybe a bit like Brexit, even some people who have had a lifelong relationship with certain parties are making decisions to vote for others or campaign for others, right? Holding their noses, perhaps. there's a by-election coming up in Bath, isn't there, where that kind of conversation is going on. Tell us a bit about that, if you would.
Which ward was that in? I'm not so sure about that. Which by-election was that for? We've got a full election coming up in May. A full council election, which is the chance to actually remove the current council. But I can't see it happening. I think there's a lot of the largest sort of opposition group probably is the Conservatives. Bath used to be a very conservative city. I can't see the Conservatives picking up a huge amount of support at the moment. I think you're right. What we're seeing people say, well, the politics isn't doing it for us. We're having to organize ourselves. And often it's on single issues or maybe a group of issues. In the past, it's always been quite small groups of activists with very strong opinions that have set up stuff and made change. The rest of us maybe have suffer a little bit more inertia. And it's only when this starts to really impact our lives that we come together and we say, actually, you guys, you are not the majority and you're doing stuff to us that is actually going to make our lives, they're going to make us poorer, they're going to make our quality of life less good. And we're fighting back. And I think they're unused to this. I think they very much depended on the inertia of local people. And you have to look at the kind of people that do stand for council. I'm not sure they're representative of the average person in the street. And most of us are too busy. We've got jobs. We've got families. We can't devote that. I mean, it's mind-numbingly boring as well, all the papers to go through. So, yeah, I think councillors become a self-selecting, often quite people with agendas who want to put a personal crusade through. And it's just not reflecting the average person in the street. And I think that's where the mismatch is coming. And it is now producing tension like this as we move towards policies. I mean, and local central government doesn't seem to be doing much to kick back against it. I mean, you've taken Sadiq Khan's expansion of the ULEZ zone. I haven't heard a word from central government saying this is wrong. This is going to cause problems. He just seems to be able to just do. I'm surprised he hasn't extended it to the whole country. He just seems to be able to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, well, just on that note, I mean, there is a remit within the mayor for London's jurisdiction to have control formally over the police and over partly some of these transport questions. What's so shocking is that when he actually had some kind of consultation, that over 80% of people said they didn't want it, and he's going to flagrantly ignore that. But as we've seen, many councils, outer boroughs in London are challenging that, saying they don't want it. And also there are many residents and others that are challenging it. And we'll be talking more about that because there's a big protest that's planned. There's lots of campaigns and calls to actions that are going to be doing. But one thing that is definitely the case, as you say, Mark, is that lots of different people who are disillusioned and maybe beginning to feel politically homeless are getting involved in these grassroots local democracy issues. They are really important. What's so refreshing today, talking to people from different parts of the UK, and next week we're going to have some more from other areas. I'll talk about that more, is that people are taking the initiative themselves. They're saying this is not acceptable. It's not democratic. There's damaging impacts, and this is what we're going to do about it. And you know, Together is doing something with you guys on the 2nd of February at 7 o'clock. It's going to be at Claverton Community Hall, which is Claverton Down Road in Bath. And people should come along to that. Will you join us for a bit for the next part of the show, just before we take an ad? Can we come back with you, Mark?
I'd be happy to.
Great. I'm Alan Miller. You're listening to TNT Radio. We'll be back with you just after this break. Thank you.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Remember back in 2021 when Georgia passed new voting regulations into law? The media and the left went certifiably nuts, claiming without any evidence that the changes were targeting the African-American community and would make it almost impossible for many of them to cast a vote in that state. Voter suppression, they cried. It was Jim Crow, they claimed. And Major League Baseball was so offended that they moved the All-Star game, which was slated to be played in Atlanta that summer. Even record turnout during the 2022 midterms didn't stop the left from repeating false claims about the state of Georgia's election procedures. But a funny thing has happened. The University of Georgia has conducted a poll asking Georgia voters about their voting experiences in 2022. Guess what? 0% of blacks reported a poor experience. In fact, 72%, meanwhile, said that they had an excellent experience, the same as white voters. So, folks, this should finally put to rest that false talking point constantly spewed by the left in order to push their false narrative of black voters under attack in Georgia. Except it won't. In fact, the false claims will only get worse. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
While the mainstream media peddles fear, thousands of prominent scientists are speaking out despite a near blackout in the mainstream media. For example, Clintel was founded in 2019 by Emeritus Professor of Geophysics Gus Berghout and science journalist Marcel Kroc. This global network of 900 scientists and professionals make the point that CO2 is not a pollutant. It is essential to all life on Earth. Photosynthesis is a blessing. More CO2 is beneficial for nature, greening the Earth. Additional CO2 in the air has promoted growth in global plant biomass. It is also good for agriculture, increasing the yields of crops worldwide.
Alan Miller on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, everyone. I am Alan Miller. Welcome back. This is TNT Radio, where free speech matters, where we talk about the issues of the day with a view on freedom and rights and democracy, privacy and choice and autonomy. Today, we're talking about low traffic neighborhoods, 15 and 20 minute cities, ULEZ expansion, and what LTNs, sometimes called active travel, livable cities, a range of interesting pseudonyms, really means for people locally. And I'm here joined by Mark Sparrow from Bath. Mark, one of the things that often gets sort of swept to the side is the impact on the most vulnerable. You know, if you think about the last few years and the discussion about the vulnerable, it's strange now that people with disabilities, the elderly and others, don't seem to feature in this conversation about road closures and low traffic neighborhoods. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we've definitely seen a reduction in accessibility. For example, as more roads have been closed off to traffic, councils have let cafes and restaurants spread their tables out to create what they call cafe culture. Now, if you're in a wheelchair or a mobility scooter, and you're trying to get past, and the pavements are just full of tables and chairs, you know, this is a real problem. And I don't think councils have thought about the needs of disabled people. I'm not quite sure how they see them, but they're just blue badge parking spaces. Disabled parking spaces have been taken away or moved or pushed away from the centre. And I don't think councils quite understand that some people, particularly those who've got very disabled, say, children, they might have a van which fits the wheelchair in, and they've got to use that. It could be used as a changing room, a safe space. It's actually a home away from home. And in doing what they've done, they have isolated a lot of disabled people. And, you know, where once you might go out in your car and park somewhere and have a coffee and you can only walk a short distance. Well, if you now have to walk, say, half a mile to do the same thing as a disabled person, you're just not going to do it. And I think that, coupled with a number that was shielding during lockdown, has meant that a lot of disabled people have become detached from their societies, from their city centres. And I think the environment is given a much higher priority, and disabled people can just, well, we're collateral damage. That's the problem. And it's sad, because actually being able to get out, to be able to have somewhere like a public square where people can meet, pop into a bookshop. I mean, I heard from one disabled person who'd been invited to a lunch in Milsom Street in Bath, and basically, even taxis aren't allowed down there. And she said, well, I want to meet with my friends. They've invited me. Now, I suppose the friends could turn around and say, okay, we'll go somewhere else. But she'd actually been totally locked out. She said, unless I crawl there on my hands and knees, I don't know how I'm going to be able to get there. So she turned down the offer and stayed at home. And it's that kind of thing. I just don't think I won't use the word zealots, but the enthusiastic supporters of these schemes really understand how they impact ordinary people in their daily lives.
I was going to come in there, Mark, because there was a time where urban planning was ambitious. We saw with the Victorians everything from tunneling to the future, sewage systems, bridges, trains, infrastructure development, housing projects to get rid of the old slums, sweep them away, an idea of the future, how people could have good sanitary and decent housing and services and provisions, and that you'd have an orientation towards the future. And it does seem that it's in stark opposition to all these measures. In a way, what we need in Britain is a festival of Britain, a view of the future where we can think about the kind of transportation needs that we have, which would include, of course, parks and green areas and cycling and walking, but that we can have sort of sensible, rational planning, that the public is in the front and centre. Often we're told, aren't we, that the markets say that we can't do this, or we must do this because there's a catastrophe or an emergency. So often the orientation is that we're at a permanent stage of crisis. I think what we need to do is step back, and to your points about those with disabilities and all the others in our community, that the public is put front and centre in terms of thinking about what our towns and our cities, our regions and our country look like. And actually, we're put at the heart of it. And it does strike me that if local councillors, who only ever get a few hundred votes, and MPs for that matter, are not prepared to do this, then, you know, we must kind of take a stronger position on it, and we must assert these things, and we must organise ourselves to do so. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think we're up against lobby groups like the cycling lobby is huge, particularly in London. And they really, the squeakiest wheel gets the oil, as the old saying goes. And they seem to be driving the agenda. Now, fine, you're 30-something, cycling great, walking great, but when you're elderly or you're disabled, there doesn't seem to be any thought given to that whatsoever. And so I think there is a strong lobby, and that they're basically getting all the funds and all the attention. And there's a huge elephant in the room, which is public transport. Now, if you live in London, you do have fabulous public transport. You know, there are buses, there are tubes. Even in cities like Bath, the public transport is almost on the point of collapse. The council's just withdrawn subsidies from a number of rural bus services. And you can wait 20 minutes, 40 minutes for a bus to get to work. So in banning the use of cars without any alternative other than walking or cycling, you really are impacting on a lot of people. Busy families have got to get kids maybe to a couple of different schools. They've got one child maybe with special needs goes to a different school. They're being forced to drive the long way around and having their lives turned upside down for some kind of ideology. And I do feel sorry for them, because they're already having to work hard with the cost of living crisis to keep their heads above water. And this is just another blockage that's just put in their way by people who really aren't thinking.
Indeed. Mark, I want to thank you for joining us today. Just a reminder to everyone that this next Thursday, the 2nd of February at 7 o'clock in Bath, there will be a meeting to discuss this, but with local residences and businesses who are very concerned. It's at Claverton Community Hall, which is on Claverton Down Road in Bath. Mark, good luck with everything. We shall certainly be supporting with together with our residences, our signatories in the area. And I look forward to speaking to you more on this, and good luck with everything in Bath. Thanks for joining today.
Thanks, Alan.
So we've heard from various people around the UK. We've heard from Haringey and Victoria Ward talking about the egregious measures, the fact that councillors have not been listening. In fact, not only not listening, but steaming ahead and doing measures regardless. But there is a consultation that you can still respond to if you're in Haringey, officially till the 31st of January, but it looks like it's extended as well to the 15th of Feb. And there are going to be more things happening in Haringey. There's going to be an invitation to leaders to get involved in a public debate, and people on the ground are going to be lobbying and sending emails and letters and calling up their councillors. And that's happening across the UK. We know that in Oxford, having spoken to John Skinner, that even more measures are being planned and implemented. But residents and businesses are fighting back now. There have been many videos by people in retail and hospitality that are being really impacted. We've just seen last week that one of the long-standing restaurateurs have had to close as a consequence of low traffic neighbourhoods, of the road blocks. And the bus gates, the 15-minute city they're planning, is going to have even more impacts in a gridlocked Oxford where many people are losing their livelihoods. It's going to be local democracy that's going to win. And despite any smears, there's a... for those of you who are in Oxford, there's a council meeting on the 21st of February, and we together have invited the councillors, Liz Effman, Duncan Enright, Andrew Gant, to come and speak and address residents and citizens in Oxford about these issues, why they think they are of benefit to people in Oxford. You know, put the case to them, have an open debate where we can all get to thrash it out, have those that are for these measures to come and speak and those that are opposed to them, and really get to the heart of this, because surely that's what's missing with these so-called consultations that Niall Crowley has written about recently and talked about, that often they're very loaded. Everyone has commented about how loaded the questions are. We've seen them recently in other areas as well, haven't we? Do you want vaccine passports? And you know, you don't get a straight yes or no answer. You get a kind of question that it goes along with the whole premise that they're a good thing. And so increasingly, it seems the case that as people take more of a stand, and they're doing so in Cambridge against the congestion charges, they're doing so in Canterbury. You know, interestingly, previous chiefs of planning have come out and called Canterbury measures Stasi-like. And in Birmingham, 50% at least of motorists, of locals, have not been paying these clean air zone charges, while Birmingham decides that it's going to chop the city up into seven zones. We're seeing the mayor of Hackney saying 75% of cars will be reduced, and then cavalierly mocking that on Twitter. And we'd love to get Philip Glanville, the mayor of Hackney, on the show here, and certainly into a public debate as we talked with Niall Crowley. You should all follow Niall Crowley at Elon Dems, who's been a long-standing campaigner. And we're very excited about the 17,500 that are opposed to this, and we will be supporting with Together. And Together has a page that if you're interested in all of this, you can go to. It's called Free Our Streets. If you go to togetherdeclaration.org, that's the website link, togetherdeclaration.org, and then click on Free Our Streets. It's also got information about the upcoming event in Bath, and lots of information about things that are going on around the country in different areas where people are challenging things, information on consultations, where there are challenges being made. And I think the really important thing is to make sure that locally we reinforce this, and we have solidarity, and we link this up with people across different boroughs, like against the ULEZ, the challenge against ULEZ, which there was originally going to be a protest today in Trafalgar Square. That's been postponed. There'll be more information on that soon. Just by way of rounding up on all of this, many people are concerned by this shift towards a more technocratic, bureaucratic way of doing things, this democratic deficit, as Mark Sparrow called it, this lack of willingness to engage or even think it's important to do so, as Ben Parr was talking about, that somehow it's no longer necessary. And that's not just the Conservatives, but it's across the board, it seems. And certainly at Together, our goal has been to resuscitate the sense of the public, of public democracy, of the public being the front and center. That's also why we're going to be launching our cabinet. So in addition to all the campaigning we do around the country, for instance, around the care workers, which, by the way, many MPs and Lords have now signed, and we'll be delivering that in to reinstate, compensate and apologise to the 40,000 plus care workers that have lost due to an unnecessary and very damaging mandate. But the campaigns to get people involved to take back democracy, to free our streets and take back democracy, and to have a voice in shaping where things go. And our cabinet will also have people that are well-known and of expertise in various fields, from industry to the economy, health, education, hospitality, and much more. And as we go on with this, we think it's really important that as many people that are concerned about the technocratic turn, about bureaucratic impositions that sideline us, that often treat us with contempt, that ignore us and tell us that they know best, and they don't want to have backroom deals, not in front of the children, for any discussion. So we are always insisting on free speech. It's why it's great to be on TNT radio, where free speech is a key thing, talking to people who often don't get their voices heard. But now, increasingly, there is a lot of press interest in what's happening with low traffic neighborhoods, with 15 and 20 minute cities, and with ULEZ expansion. And I'm very much looking forward to, over the next coming weeks, talking to other campaigners and activists, to writers, academics, broadcasters, a whole range of people who've been front and center in their key fields and areas, in really questioning things, asking what can be done about it, why it is that bureaucrats and technocrats don't want to listen. And we're seeing, and we've seen, haven't we, from the Twitter files, the fact that many people have been taken down, have been censored and suffocated. Why is that? If everything is so clear, if all these answers are known and everyone's really confident about that, why are we not just making that clear in society? Why are we not allowing the antiseptic of reason, the illumination through better ideas, through clear ideas, just to sort of illuminate the truth. Why is it that things need to be censored, suffocated and shut down? Why are there shadow bans? Why are people being targeted and smeared? I'd love to get Peter Walker here on the show, writer for The Guardian, who, when we've engaged on Twitter, I've presented to him the issue of local democracy and damaging impacts. And he has said, well, that seems to be contested. But at the same time, Peter's very happy to write articles about conspiracists. I think it's really important, ladies and gentlemen, that we don't allow the idea that this is all just a few conspiracists, but that we have our voices heard locally, that we get involved in local campaigns, that we lobby our councillors and MPs, that we write to central government. Together's going to be running a series of campaigns to challenge central government with funding of these road closures, to challenge the damaging impacts they're having, and also to say that there are better ways of doing it and putting those things forward. Mark Harper, at the Department of Transport, the Transport Minister, actually knows us, of course, and we will be doing that whilst we're supporting lots of local grassroots campaigns. So we're heading to the end of the show. I'd like to leave us all with the idea of a brilliant, brilliant writer who wrote All That Is Solid Melts Into Air, all about urban planning, which really was perhaps the entire opposite of what we're seeing today. It's about chronicling the transformation of cities and urban spaces, dynamic, exciting, sometimes a little worrying for some, but to make things better and more beautiful for us, with us at the heart of it. And in many ways, that would be what Together would say. That's certainly what I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see it done democratically. I'd like to see the public at the heart of it. Please get involved if you're interested with us at Together. We're at TogetherDec at Twitter, togetherdeclaration.org on the website. I'm Alan Miller.